Devasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is in the sixth canto, first chapter, text number 63. Tan Nimita Smara Vyaja Graha Grasto Vichetanaha Tam Eva Manasa Dhyanan Swa Dharmad Virama Ha Tanmihita Smara Vyaja Graha Grasto Vichetanaha Tam Eva Manasa Dhyayan Swadharmad Viraramaha Tannimita Smara Vyaja Graha Grasto Vichetanaha Tameva Manasa Dhyayan Swadharmad Viraramaha. Please chant. Jesus. Grasto Vichetana Svadharma Viraha Tat Nimita, caused by the sight of her. Smara Vyaja, taking advantage of his thinking of her always. Graha Grastaha, being caught by an eclipse. Vichetanaha, having completely forgotten his real position. Tam, her. Eva, Certainly. Manasa, by the mind. Dhyayan, meditating upon. Swadharmat, from the regulative principles executed by a brahmana. Viramaha, he completely ceased. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the same way that the sun and moon are eclipsed by a low planet, the brahmana lost all his good sense. Taking advantage of this situation, he always thought of the prostitute, and within a short time, he took her as a servant in his house and abandoned all the regulative principles of a brahmana. Purport. By speaking this verse, Sukadeva Goswami wants to impress upon the mind of the reader that Ajamil's exalted position as a brahmana was vanquished by his association with the prostitute. So much so that he forgot all his brahminical activities. Nevertheless, at the end of his life, by chanting the four syllables of the name, Narayana, he was saved from the gravest danger of falling down. Svapamapi asya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. Even a little devotional service can save one from the greatest danger. Devotional service, which begins with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is so powerful that even if one falls down from an exalted position of a brahmana through sexual indulgence, he can be saved from all calamities if he somehow or other chants the holy name of the Lord. This is the extraordinary power of the Lord's holy name. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, it is advised that one not forget the chanting of the holy name, even for a moment. Satatam kirtanayanto mam yatantas cha dridharataha. Bhagavad Gita 9:14. There are so many dangers in this material world that one may fall down from an exalted position at any time. Yet, if one keeps himself always pure and steady by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he will be safe without a doubt. Om Gyana Tumadanda Shah Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksus Unmilitam Yena Tasmaya Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadanti Swabhadantikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare Vanchakopa Tubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. In the same way that the sun and moon are eclipsed by a low planet, the brahmana lost all his good sense. Taking advantage of this situation, he always thought of the prostitute, and within a short time, he took her as a servant in his house and abandoned all the regulative principles of a brahmana. So Prabhupada refers to the Bhagavad Gita, that one verse, Svapamapyasya Dharmasya. It was in regard to Bharat Maharaj, another example. He had a great fall from human life to animal life. But because he was a devotee and he had devotional service, it never went in vain. And at the time of death, it's described whatever one thinks of, Yam Yam Vapi Smaram Bhavan Twajanti, that he will take that particular thing, whatever his mind's absorbed in, that's what he may be led to. So that's what happened to Bharat Maharaj. He became a deer because he was thinking of a deer. But because of his great assets, his spiritual power, he remembered who he was and he was able to make further advancement. So in the same way, Ajamil was very fortunate, because somehow or other, even though he lost all his brahminical qualities, his devotional service never went in vain. even if he had 1% of devotional service, someone other that saved him at the time of death. He was able to think of Narayana, and he was saved. The Vishnu Dutas came personally and protected him. So Prabhupada refers to another Bhagavad Gita verse in this purport, and it's very nice. I like to read that. This is from 9:14. Prabhupada refers to Satanam Kirtananto Mam. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that one actually becomes a Mahatma, a great soul. But one can't be rubber stamped, you know, just any ordinary man is a Mahatma. But his symptoms are described here. He's always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has no other business. So, Prabhupada writes in the purport here, when the question of glorification is there, one has to glorify the Supreme Lord, praising His holy name, His eternal form, His transcendental qualities, His uncommon pastimes. One has to glorify all these things. Therefore, a Mahatma is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So see, it's a matter of attachment. In the same way that Ajamil was attached to this prostitute, he was always thinking of her. He was meditating on her. So he became a Dharatma, or he became, I guess that's the opposite of Mahatma, right? Dharatma. Yeah, so he became just the opposite. So, but because he had performed devotional service again, he was protected. So this thinking, feeling, and willing is very important. And Prabhupada describes in the first canto that a living being cannot be vacant of desires. He's not a dead stone. He must be working, thinking, feeling, and willing. But when he thinks, feels, and wills materially, he becomes entangled. And conversely, when he thinks, feels, and wills for the service of the Lord, he becomes gradually freed from all entanglement. So the more a person is engaged in the transcendent loving service of the Lord, the more he acquires a hankering for it. That is the transcendental nature of godly service. Material service has satiation, whereas spiritual service of the Lord has neither satiation nor end. So this is intense service of the Lord. And by this intense service, Prabhupada describes that one can actually experience the presence of the Lord. So seeing the Lord means being engaged in His service. And because his person, you know, and his service are identical. Krishna is absolute. So the sincere devotee, he goes on and he glorifies the Lord. And then eventually Krishna within the heart purifies him and it gives him direction on how to perform devotional service. And this was the example given to Narada in his previous life. Krishna appeared before him and he saw such a beautiful form. He was so attracted to it. You know, just the opposite. See, Ajamil, he saw this form of two sudras, you know, embracing it. To him, it was very attractive. He couldn't get it out of his mind. This is so, you know, attractive. But, you know, can you imagine seeing the Supreme Lord's form, which is the perfection of all forms within the entire creation? It's the most perfect form you could ever see. And Narada, in his previous birth as a, you know, maidservant's son, he saw this. And he was so attracted to it, he just couldn't get out of his mind. But when it disappeared, he was just completely hankering for it. And Krishna told him that, you know, I am doing this, you know, even though you have no material desires, just to increase your desire for me. So he spent the rest of his life meditating on Krishna like that. So we shouldn't spend, we're being two graphic examples what we should spend our time meditating on, either the material attractive forms or the supreme attractive form of Krishna. Like that. Otherwise, the great power of the material energy can actually cover us. You know, this is the power of material nature. A great Brahmana has spiritual qualities, but yet he can be eclipsed. Just as described here, the moon somehow or another and the sun becomes eclipsed by a low planet. What is this low planet? It's Rahu. And who is Rahu? He's like a demon. It's described. So let's look at... I don't know much about astrology, but it's kind of interesting. I was looking in this book, and it describes Rahu. And let's see some of the qualities of Rahu. Rahu can cause all sorts of problems, depending on where it is situated. It is responsible for insatiable desires, irregular and irreligious habits, use of intoxicants, troubles from ghosts or evil spirits, uncleanliness, infectious disease, or a lifestyle filled with chaos. When aspected by a yoga karaka planet or being well situated, it can give immense wealth, power, and fame. Rahu rules foreigners, unsavory characters, black marketeers, intoxicants, poisons, ghosts, hobgoblins, and persons who do not follow the Vedas. So this is what happened to Ajamil. It just almost practically describes his position, what he was doing. You know, he was into intoxication. He was like a black marketeer. His character was very bad. So he was good qualities were influenced by this Rahu. And it's described how actually everybody has Rahu in their chart. Actually, we have all these planets in our charts. So depending on our previous desires and our karma, we may have some influence of this. You know. So this is also described here. It says the moon. What does the moon represent? And the sun? Let's just get an idea here what the sun represents. It's a supreme planet of the solar system. It radiates heat and light throughout the universe. Of course, we know that. Let's go here. The sun's position signifies self and ego, health and personal power, eyesight and vision, the heart and one's father. The sun represents authority figures, kings, rulers, governments, those working in religious organizations, health-related services, on and on, famous, all these things. So this is the sun. And then the moon, and this the moon is Chandra. It rules, let's see here. The moon's position in the horoscope signifies childhood conditions and relationships with the mother, one's emotional mind, peacefulness, comforts, and general well-being, sensitivity and happiness. The moon represents the breast and the brain, mothers, women in general, water, milk, liquids, cows, the public, romance, memory. So, to see how we're influenced by so many different things, by our association. And this association of our previous life and what we've been focusing on and what we've been doing determines how we're being influenced by the planets in this particular life. So, this again, the power of association. Just see... associating with someone by thinking, by looking, what to speak of being next to someone or being in the same position of someone. We're very much influenced by that. So the moon is also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. There's that one story of the person who had 24 gurus, I think it was, and he learned something from the moon. He learned how the material body undergoes growth and dwindling. And from the sun, he learned how to avoid entanglement even while coming into contact with sense objects. And he also learned about two different modes of perception based on seeing the real form of the soul and seeing false designative coverings. So the sun is light. And like Prabhupada describes in the Back to Godhead magazine, you know, Godhead is light, nescience is darkness. So this is our purpose, is to come to the light. From darkness, go from darkness to light, from the impermanent, you know, to the eternal, like that. Sura sings that nicely in his song. How's it go? Agama, Tama, something like that. Yeah. Jai. Yes. From the Vedas. It's great. So this is our purpose, is to come to the light somehow or other. So we can see what happens. What is darkness? It's described how it's being covered, Ajimyo, like the low planet covering the sun and the moon. It actually can cover it. It's very powerful. But we can actually become cleansed by engaging in devotional service. And there's a very nice pastime with Uddhava. He was, when Krishna was about to leave, and he was begging him to stay, please stay, please leave me, don't leave me, you know. And he was presenting himself as a conditioned soul, entangled in fruitive activities. But he was confident that he can cross over this illusory energy because he was addicted to chanting and remembering the glorious activities and words of Lord Krishna. So this is our hope. And it was like Uddhava was begging like the Lord for his mercy of his Sudarshan chakra, whose effulgence represents the process of remembering and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. Can you imagine that, the effulgence of the Sudarshan chakra, and how powerful that is? You see, he becomes engaged in incomparable bliss of thinking of the Lord, and he is easily free from all these bad illusions, fear, lamentation, ghosts, spirits, demons, are cut to pieces. And we know the example that's given by Maharaj Ambarish, a pure devotee of the Lord, who was so humble, and there was some disagreement between Durvasa Muni and him, and Durvasa Muni became angry and created a huge fiery demon out of one piece of hair. He just plucked it out and slammed it on the ground, and this huge demon came, and to what an obstacle, huh? But Ambarish Maharaj, you know, he wasn't a great mystic, but he's a great devotee. And just simply depending on the Lord sent his personal weapon, the Sudarshan chakra, and just completely sliced to pieces that demon. And then he chased Durvasa Muni all throughout the universe for 1 year. You know, and nothing would protect him except a devotee. And he had to take shelter of a devotee's lotus feet in order to be protected. This is the power of a devotee. We should never minimize the power of a pure devotee. So I'd like to read something about this Sudarshan chakra. When Durvasa Muni finally reached, after going all over the universe, even going to Vishnu, he came back to Maharaj Ambarish and, you know, grabbed his lotus feet and begged for forgiveness. So I'm just going to read a few prayers that he prayed to the Sudarshan chakra. And let me go there. This is from the 9th canto, 5th chapter, and it starts with text number 3. Maharaj Ambarish said, "O Sudarshan chakra, you are fire. You are the most powerful sun. You are the moon, the master of all luminaries. You are water, earth, and sky. You are the air. You are the five sense objects, sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. And you are the senses also. O most favored of Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have thousands of spokes. O master of the material world, destroyer of all weapons, original vision of the Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Kindly give shelter and be auspicious to this Brahmana. O Sudarshan wheel, you are religion. You are truth. You are the encouraging statements. You are sacrifice, and you are the enjoyer of the fruits of sacrifice. You are the maintainer of the entire universe, and you are the supreme transcendental prowess in the hands of the supreme personality of Godhead. You are the original vision of the Lord, and therefore you are known as Sudarshan. Everything has been created by your activities, and therefore you are all-pervading. Actually, Sudarshan means auspicious vision, which is the original vision of the Supreme Personality of God is described. And this is the glance of the Supreme Personality of God that created everything. And that's what the chakra represents. O Sudarshan, you have a very auspicious hub, and therefore you are the upholder of all religion. You are just like an inauspicious comet for the irreligious demons. Indeed, you are the maintainer of the three worlds. You are full of transcendental effulgence, and you are as quick as the mind, and you are able to work wonders. I can simply utter the word Namaha, offering all obeisances to you. Some nice purports that Prabhupada gives, but we'll just read one more verse. O Master, speech, by your effulgence, full of religious principles, the darkness of the world is dissipated, and the knowledge of learned persons or great souls is manifested. Indeed, no one can surpass your effulgence, for all things manifested and unmanifested, gross and subtle, superior and inferior, are but various forms of you that are manifested by your effulgence. Can you imagine that? How powerful this Sudarshan chakra is? And this is just a very short purport Prabhupada writes here. Without illumination, nothing can be seen, especially in the mature world. The illumination in this world emanates from the effulgence of Sudarshan, the original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illuminating principle of the sun, the moon, and fire emanate from Sudarshan. Similarly, illumination by knowledge also comes from Sudarshan, because with the illumination of Sudarshan, one can distinguish one thing from another, the superior from the inferior. Generally, people accept a powerful yogi like Durvasa Muni as wonderfully superior. But if such a person is chased by the Sudarshan chakra, we can see his real identity and understand how inferior he is because of his dealings with devotees. Just see how powerful. And just see all our temples. What do they have on top? They have a chakra, the Sudarshan chakra. So these temples are like beacons, they're like lighthouses where people come and they get this light. And what they do is they get, we heard from previous classes like Ramashar, these are like forts where people come and get charged and they go out and they distribute this light and they eliminate this darkness of ignorance. You know, and this is a special month for doing that. Devotees going out and distributing these transcendental literatures, which are like light. They're like Krishna's weapons. They're so powerful. So, this is, we don't know what this book distribution is doing. There's one lady called the BBT. I actually happened to be there on a Saturday working, and usually I don't answer the phone, but some another I picked it up. And she goes, oh, somebody answered the phone. So thank you, thank you. She's like so grateful. Thank you for answering the phone. I thought nobody was going to pick it up. Thank you. And I was like, well, yes, hi, how can I help you? And she said, I got one of your books. One of your members was distributing his books. He gave me a Bhagavad Gita and I gave him a donation. And I've been reading this book and it's so amazing. You know, and then she's telling me how she's in tears, she's crying and appreciating the book so much. And then she started, telling me her story, basically. You know, she was in another country. I forget which country it was. But she, her parents are very poor, poverty-stricken. So sometimes Americans go to the countries and they adopt people. They adopt children. So she thought to give their child, her brother and herself, a better life, they let these two different families adopt them in America. But this family that she happened to be adopted by were very abusive. They treated her like really, really bad and, you know, just terrible. And very demeaning, always, you know, chastising and negative. Because she says, I live with so many negative people, and they're constantly bickering at me. And my mom would always say, I wish you would die. And I wish you'd kill yourself. And she'd leave razor blades out for her to kill herself. And she even tried it several times. You know? And why don't you just go, run, you know, just leave. You know, can you imagine? It's like so heavy. She said her brother had a worse condition than her, but she didn't go into detail about that. But anyway, she ended up in the streets, and this one guy found her, took her in, and, you know, he says he'd take care of her, but actually he never married her, but he had children with her, and now he treats her practically the same. And he says that, you know, these children are mine. Why don't you just leave? You know, why don't you just go? It's like, but she takes care of the children. She's there 24 hours, you know, just taking care of the children, raising the children. I think she has two or three kids. And then he's like interested in other women. And, she, you know, he's constantly monitoring her. And he can't do anything. But still he's trying to get rid of her and like that. Anyway, she says, my only hope is this Bhagavad Gita. You know, I read this, and I'm so happy when I read this book that it just, you know, I'd say how I'm able to cope. So she wanted to, you know, she was like tears the whole time. So it was very moving. Anyway, she was saying that she would like to visit the temple. She doesn't live very far from here. But anyway, this is how we don't know how darkness people are in, and what a great light and resource this Bhagavad Gita is, and these books that we distribute. They're very powerful. You know, people are in the darkness of ignorance, the darkness of suffering and abuse. And, you know, these books are so powerful that no matter what kind of ailment you have or what you're being influenced by, the lower planet, which represents ghosts and demons and, you know, so much corruption, things, you will be protected. Just like the Sudarshan chakra will just chop these things. And it's very powerful, very, very powerful. So today is the disappearance of Sri Saranga Thakur. He's an important branch of the Chaitanya tree. And he lived in Navadvip. It's described that he stayed under a Bakula tree. And he worked hard every day to please his worshipful deity. He would single-handedly collect fruits, vegetables, firewood. He would also beg rice, cook, bathe, dress, and feed the Lord. And after a full day of deity service, he would cross the Ganges River to join Mahaprabhu in his Harinam Sankirtan party in Mayapur. And then during one visit, Lord Gauranga noticed that Saranga's beloved Bakula tree was dying up and almost dead, and the Lord Chaitanya embraced the tree and with his beautiful golden arms, and he completely rejuvenated the tree. And it burst forth with green leaves and fresh, super fragrant flowers. And to this day, the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will worship this special Kalpa Vriksha tree in Sridhar Mayapur. And sometimes devotees collect small pieces of wood, which occasionally fall off, and they make necklaces and they worship it. So Saranga Thakur, he would never initiate disciples, despite Lord Chaitanya's insistence. But one day he relented, and he decided to initiate the first person he saw. And while bathing in the Ganges, he brushed against a floating corpse, and suddenly it sprang to life. Stunned, the man slowly identified himself and bowed down to Saranga Thakur, who had just miraculously renewed his life. And after giving him mantra diksha, Saranga Thakur became famous as Saranga Murari Thakur, because the disciple's previous name was Murari. And then it's described that in Vrajalila, Saranga serves Radha Gopinath as Nandi Mukhi Shaki. And by taking a 45-minute riksha ride from downtown Navadvip, you can still see the deities of Saranga Thakur and the Kalpa Vriksha Bakula tree. So this is interesting. There's another, there was a nice Vyasa Puja offering given by Shivaram Swami. And he was using this analogy as an offering to Srila Prabhupada, how He talked about this Murari Chaitanya. He died of a snake bite at an early age, and his parents placed his body in the Ganges. And when the great devotee Saranga Thakur, whose disappearance is today, he took bath that day, and the corpse of the body brushed against his body, and with the strength he brought this Murari Chaitanya back to life. So it's described that his parents actually heard about him, that he reappeared. So the parents came to Saranga Thakur's kutir and to claim him. And the boy said, "Why do you come? Why do you claim to be my parents? You have given me up for dead and cast me into the Ganga. Saranga Thakur gave me new life and taught me the service of Lord Chaitanya. He is my father. This is my home." So he used this analogy as how we are, you know, the spell of Maya, family life, we're attached, you know, we become attached and they're attached to us in so many ways. And it's like being dead. But it's described as Saranga Thakur, he just touched him with his foot and he came back to life. And it's similarly how Srila Prabhupada and the pure devotees come and they touch us with their presence, we come back to life. You see, so we were like dead, you know, floating in this material world, you know, attached to all these material objects that degrade you, like Ajamil became degraded. But if somehow or another we get our life back by the touch of a lotus feet of the pure devotee, we can actually, you know, we'll be able to see things. Actually, I was told that Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna, it's described somewhere that Krishna, his lotus feet is so powerful that it could counteract the influence, it kill hundred thousands of Rahu planets. And there's another quote that Srila Prabhupada said that even he, with his foot, can destroy the influence of 100,000 Rahu planets. This is the power we're dealing with. You know, the lotus feet of a pure devotee, which you described in the analogy of Ambarish Maharaj, and the Sudarshan Chakra, which you can receive, this powerful illuminating knowledge that can't be defeated. Who can defeat the Sudarshan Chakra of Krishna? Nobody. It creates everything. It's power. So it's about 8:15 now. I'd like to end here. And if there's any comments or questions, realizations? Anybody? Jai. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.
Staying in touch with that lady?